One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Save $100 on the Craftsman V20 6-Tool Power Tool Combo Kit, now at $199. No matter what the project is, Craftsman's high-quality, high-performance products empower you to build on. Stop by your nearest Lowe's store and check out the full line of Craftsman tools today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Content warning. The following episode contains disturbing descriptions of violence and sexual assault. Listener discretion is advised. Two women with families who loved them. One vicious serial killer who recorded his crimes. He may have evaded capture without the brave actions of yet a third woman who helped bring justice to the victims' families. But now authorities believe those victims weren't his last. This week's episode is The Murders of Kathleen Jo Henry and Veronica Abouchuk.
A bump in the night, your heart fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed. You'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinister Hood.
I'm gonna kill you. Well, we originally released this one as a mini-sode back in August of 2024, but several folks commented, you know, a couple people said, I'm from there. I maybe heard the killer's name, but I have not heard the victim's names as much in the coverage. So we found this from a TikTok is what we'll tell you in this episode.
Yeah. And like all the crimes where the perpetrator's name is out there more than the victim's, we want to change that. So
yes,
in honor of the two women who were brutally murdered by this guy, these stick with me because it's not just about killing, it's about the recording and watching it back and the gratification. And that's a whole other level of sick.
Definitely reminiscent of that and any of the killers that are interested in power, control, and almost like possession of their victims. But through this, we were also able to highlight some systemic issues that contributed to both of these women's murders, as well as some resources at the end. So as heart-wrenching as it is to listen to, at least perhaps they will not have died in vain if there becomes more focus on similarly situated folks who would be at risk otherwise of having their lives ended like this.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, here is the episode.
Well, this is a rough one, everybody. Just heads up. It's a lot more gruesome than the ones we usually cover.
Truly, yeah. This one came to our attention. I think you saw it on TikTok. Someone was just talking about the initial breaking of the story. And since we have heard this story, there's been even more development on it and some stuff that we can bring you at the end. So it is up there with the murderer of Kim Vall, that sort of viciousness that one human can do to another one.
Yeah, and the pleasure that's derived from it is really the most sickening part of this, as with Kim Wall's murderer. I forget his name, and honestly, I'm glad about that. And then this monster as well. Just the sickos, man.
Yeah, the brutality. And also, I think their case has become emblematic of what happens when you are an Alaskan Native woman and you go missing, and their families have all kind of argued, you know, if we would have perhaps something could have happened faster, and we'll get to that sort of. And so what do we think? But that is why we wanted to cover it, was not because it was vicious. It is sadly very vicious, but because it helps, I think, shed more light on what is an
epidemic.
That's the word. I was just say it's an epidemic, truly, to where there's task force and stuff, which we're happy to see that now. But you'll see these murders happened a few years ago. So no matter if it's only, you know, only 5 years ago, we've made so many strides, but man, we're so behind. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it takes the community to help, which is what happened in this case.
Absolutely. Well, I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
And let's get into it. Veronica Abalchuk grew up in the coastal western Alaska village of Stebbins. One of several siblings, Veronica and her family were tight-knit, with her older sister telling KTUU,
"My sister Veronica was a real nice person. She never cussed. She didn't have a mean bone in her soul."
Veronica was known for the beautiful grass baskets and dolls she crafted, and loved lunching and shopping with her sisters, cooking, and the holidays. She graduated from high school in 1985, and eventually had several children of her own. When she became a grandmother, she was overjoyed and loved doting on her precious grandbabies. Veronica's daughter, Christy Grimaldi, later explained to KTUU that her mother was unable to raise Christy and her siblings, recognizing as an adult that her mother's struggles could be traced back to the sexual abuse Veronica suffered as a child at the hands of a Catholic priest. After having her first child of her own, Christy invited her mother to come and live with them. Veronica came and went, according to Christy, sometimes returning to the streets for weeks at a time. Well, you see pretty early mm-hmm. on that severe abuse she suffered as a child impacts her ability to properly care for her own children once mm-hmm. she has them, which we see that a lot with, you know, undealt with trauma that kind of resurfaces, and you're trying to parent while also heal your own trauma, and sometimes it just doesn't work out.
Mm-hmm. What a generous attempt by her daughter to try to say, you know, I understand why she couldn't take mm-hmm. care of us as a kid. She couldn't control what happened to her as a little girl, and that is, you know, colored the rest of her life. So that's a very, yeah, generous thing to give your mom that benefit of the doubt and to invite her to come stay. But it's got to be so hard as an adult watching your parent who, you know, couldn't, you know, didn't have it in them to raise you just because of what happened to them, continue to struggle, and you mm-hmm. do everything you can. But it's so hard when you have a family member like that.
Yeah, the roles become a bit reversed mm-hmm. where the adult child is almost the parent mm-hmm. to her mom and is trying to, you know, help her get off her feet. But it is so compassionate. And that's really something that throughout, as terrible as the fates these women meet are, their families mm-hmm. never judged and were so compassionate and understanding. And that really struck me, like watching trial footage or just pictures of them in the galley, like watching the trial, which so brutal that they had mm-hmm. to leave for a lot of it, understandably. But every day, like 20 members of her family would show up because they wanted everyone to know, like, she was not defined by, you know, the hardship she had or the homelessness she experienced. She was so much more than that.
Yeah, she was loved. And that's what they mm-hmm. said in all their interviews, have reiterated, like, this is a person that mattered.
Yeah. As Veronica struggled, her family remained supportive. One of her sisters even took a brief job at Beans Cafe, an organization that provides meals to people experiencing homelessness, so she could keep in contact with her sister. In 2005, the Abalchuk family and their community was rocked when Veronica's sister, Martha Toms, was found severely beaten under a picnic table at an Anchorage park. She died the next day, and the case remains unsolved. Then in 2018, Veronica's family was devastated once more when Veronica went missing. She failed to pick up a permanent fund dividend check, and her family lost touch with her. Tatak Muma, Veronica's niece, told KTUU News,
"She was full of life. I grew up with her as a child. Auntie Veronica was a very sweet lady. She loved her kids. She loved everyone. I really miss that."
What a hard thing this family has already embarked upon with losing one daughter and sister. And then the hits, unfortunately, keep on coming.
Yeah, in such a brutal way. And in a way that is, I'm sure, feels repeated, like you're being repeatedly victimized, because not only do you lose a family member, but then you have what is often a lackluster response from law mm-hmm. enforcement of, especially as we see when Veronica goes missing in 2018, it is very difficult to report a person experiencing homelessness missing, you know, because you well, where are they supposed to be? How do you know they're missing? And that response, in my experience, has been not eager of like, I really, you know, it's just kind of like, well, we'll do what we can. Sorry. Yeah. And for this community, that's par for the course. It has been, at least.
Unfortunately, too, as we have seen and we said was an epidemic, Indigenous women are put at the bottom of the list as far as priorities all too often. In August of 2018, police found the body of a woman, along with Veronica's state identification card. Fingerprints determined the body was not Veronica. Authorities had no leads on where Veronica was or how the deceased woman ended up with her identification. Her family reported her missing officially in February of 2019, but the case went cold.
And what a feeling that, you know, it's the devastation that you don't want that news, but it, you think for a second it's closure, and then it's like, well, actually, it just so happened to be your ID card with someone else.
Which also probably gives you a little glimmer of hope. And that's, with any missing person case, that's what always sticks with me, is the not knowing versus the hoping versus maybe I'd feel better if there were closure. It just seems like such a tumultuous time where the family is left with so many questions and very little answers and oftentimes very little help.
Oh, yeah. It's emotional whiplash, surely.
Yeah. On September 19th, 2019, Valerie Kasler was hanging out near a grocery store in Anchorage, Alaska, when a man in a black truck with a foreign accent pulled up and asked her if she wanted to go for a drive. Valerie, who was experiencing homelessness at the time and was struggling with drug addiction, agreed to get in the man's truck. The man's name was Brian Smith. As the pair drove around, Smith eventually stopped to withdraw money from an ATM to pay for a, quote, date with Valerie. With Smith out of the car, Valerie took the opportunity to steal a cell phone that Smith had left inside the truck. Later, when Valerie returned to the tent she was living in at the time and charged the dead cell phone, she made a gruesome discovery. Nearly 40 images and 12 videos depicted a woman being brutally attacked. Valerie obtained an SD card and transferred all the images and videos over to it. She then turned the SD card, along with information on Smith's truck, over to police.
This has got to be, you feel like you're in a horror movie, right?
Oh, that, my gosh.
Getting back to your safe place, you know, despite the fact she's experiencing homelessness, you feel vulnerable anyway. And just think, I was just in that truck with this guy.
Yeah. And because, as we've seen how police can often treat women that are in these circumstances, like Valerie, the first thought is, I can't turn this over. I can't trust the police. One, I'm going to get charged with prostitution of getting in this man's car and going on a drive, or be blamed or be charged with stealing. You know, I mean, there's just a whole list, but eventually she did the most brave and honorable thing, and that's, I got to put my own shit aside. This is crazy. Somebody's got to be held accountable, and she turned it over to the cops.
Right? It's not like you got a couple of pictures and they're running an illegal poker game in someone's basement, and it's like a crime, but is it? But it's like the worst thing that you can see imaginable, and a person who is in a very similar life circumstance to you, where it's like, that very easily could have been me. Sinister Hood will be right back.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
The woman in the images and videos was identified as Kathleen Henry. Born December 22, 1988, in Bethel, Alaska, Kathleen was an Alaskan native from the Yupik Eskimo village of Eek. Over the years, Kathleen struggled with drug addiction, oftentimes finding herself part of the unhoused population. Throughout the hardship and frequent run-ins with law enforcement, Kathleen often expressed her feelings through her poetry, and Kathleen proudly shared on her Facebook that at 24 years old, she had earned her GED while incarcerated at the Hilland Mountain Correctional Center, an accomplishment of which she was extremely proud.
And that's something that, you know, we always want to reiterate is the last moments of her life were captured and were heinous. But before that, she had 30 whole years of good times, but obviously bad times being incarcerated, but still having that drive of, I got my GED. I like to write poetry. You know, I love my family. And what happens often in these cases is the victims get distilled down to like, that was the serial killer's victims. And it's like before they were that, they were, you know, Kathleen and Veronica, and they were somebody's auntie and sister. And you just hate to see that there was potential, you know, like I could turn this around. I'm happy. Mm-hmm. And I think when killers target the less dead, which are people struggling with drug addiction or sex workers or in that community, it's like, well, no one's going to miss him. And it's sort of trash anyway. Who cares? And it's like, no, every single one of these people had a whole future.
Yeah, no, I think they're both very good examples of why we should all be more empathetic and compassionate to people experiencing homelessness and drug addiction, because that's not who they are. That doesn't define them. It's not, they're not just an addict. They are a person that has an addiction, and clearly family and hobbies and passions and goals. So when you just next time you're all driving around and you see somebody experiencing that, I like to stop and think like, this was somebody's kid, sister, brother, maybe a father, a mother, somebody. And nobody ever grows up thinking, that's the life I want. So when we look at it like that, because I think so often people are like, well, if they just got a job or if they just got off of drugs, and it's not that easy. And if it was, don't you think they would? Do you think anybody wants to be living under an overpass in 100-degree weather with semi-trucks driving by, blowing shit in your face every day?
Right. Or in Alaska in negative 100-degree weather, you know, in either one. And you're right. We never know what is keeping them there. If it is a mental illness, if it is an unaddressed substance use issue or whatever. But I have had recently a friend sort of share that their parent was in a different state, homeless. And my friend is a lawyer and was like, I couldn't even find my parent. Mm-hmm. And then later on, unfortunately, found that their parent had passed and said, like, I don't have an answer for anybody, but like everybody that passed that was my parent. Mm-hmm. And you just go like, they have a family somewhere that's looking for them. Yeah. But you know, you can't know that.
No, there's a episode of Intervention that sticks with me that was about an uncle that was experiencing homelessness, and his young niece, she was an adult, but still young, like went to where he was living and tried to connect with him. And just seeing like, this is a niece, like a 20-year-old niece that's just begging for her uncle back, and what addiction and stuff can do. But that it's not just somebody that nobody cares about. Right. They all have a family that they came from. Nobody was hatched from an egg. Right. You know, we all have somebody that gave life to us.
Within the context.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and those people might not be around anymore to help them. So a lot of times it's up to the community and their generosity and compassion to reach out.
Most definitely.
The horrific images and videos of Kathleen being beaten, tortured, and sexually assaulted had been taken by Brian Stephen Smith. Born March 23, 1971 in South Africa, Smith moved to Alaska in 2014, where he became a U.S. citizen. His wife, Stephanie Bisland, originally from Anchorage, told the Associated Press that the two met in an online gaming forum, fell in love, and got married.
This woman could not have known the capacity for evil.
She couldn't.
But then she finds out, ..
But I got some hot takes for later. So what do we think? Yeah. According to Stephanie, she never saw any signs that would have led her to believe her husband was capable of such crimes. Rather, she told the AP how he built her musical instruments by hand and made her a greenhouse out of windows, further telling the news outlet,
he was very good for me, but he had another life, I guess.
Bislin added that she believes her husband's atrocious actions were exacerbated by heavy drinking.
Ma'am.
Yeah.
That's not a... He had another life, I guess.
He was great for me, but I guess he had another life that involved brutally killing women and sexually assaulting them and then doing heinous things with their bodies. But he, you know, he built me a greenhouse, so...
We've all had a couple of drinks too many. We've even, some of us maybe have binge drunk to an extent. No one turns into Ted Bundy when they get, just because they've had a couple of rounds.
No, I think that is there already. And the drinking, I'm sure, does exacerbate it or gives the liquid courage to go through with it or whatever. But it is interesting slash scary, and also we've seen it a lot where the partners of these serial killers, I mean, to protect themselves, I imagine they have to kind of compartmentalize what is going on, because otherwise you're like, holy fuck, who have I been sleeping next to these past couple years?
Right? Who did I meet on that online forum?
Mm-hmm. Smith's co-workers also spoke about the seemingly normal appearance of Smith and how shocked they were to learn of his crimes. Former colleague Adam Manor told People magazine,
"He was a very positive guy, had a good humor. He had a couple of good dad jokes. He was just a normal guy."
Those closest to him apparently had no idea about the dark side Smith possessed.
Which we talk about that. The ripple effect of crime that obviously the victims' family, the victims themselves and their families, but even so far out as you do as like a colleague, a coworker of like, who's sitting next to me? Right? That guy sat next to me at work. He told me jokes. I laughed at his jokes. We shared a cupcake at so-and-so's birthday. Mm-hmm. Like you start to go through like, how could I have known? And I think with people like this who are able to really cover that up, it's like, you couldn't have known.
No, they are very good at living a double life. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a whole other job in and of itself, honestly. Imagine masking all day your true feelings. And then, you know, I mean, but playing back everything of, my God, I was in his car. You know, was this the car that woman was in? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, anytime huge crimes like this happen, I just want to reiterate, like, even if you weren't directly affected, if it affected you in some way that still makes you uncomfortable and it comes up and brings you anxiety, then that's something to work on. Like it's valid. I mean, you, just because you weren't like a immediate victim does not mean that you weren't a victim still of something like this.
I agree. I think it's important that you name it without shaming it, like, and not say, but you know, he didn't really ever do anything to me. It's like, no, naming it. I am feeling like I've been duped, like I've been tricked, like I can't trust anyone. This is severely damaging to me or whatever. Cause you're right. I think saying, oh, it's fine. That's how things fester. And then we don't deal with them.
Yeah. In 2019, Kathleen Henry was 30 years old and experiencing homelessness. Smith, who was working at the Town Place Suites by Marriott at the time, a hotel in Midtown Anchorage, met Kathleen and offered her a place to stay, a brief respite from living on the streets. Smith booked a room at the hotel on September 2nd, with a checkout scheduled for September 4th. On September 4th, 2019, around 1 a.m., Smith took images of Kathleen's body with his phone. He also filmed himself harming Kathleen, both beating, torturing, and strangling her, as he narrated.
"In my movies, everybody always dies. What are my followers going to think of me? People need to know when they are being serial killed."
Smith's face is never shown, but his distinct voice with its South African accent is clear in the footage.
It is so
sickening.
It's sickening to think that this occurred, but then on top of that, having someone that is wanting to film it, presumably to watch it themselves later. Mm-hmm. Like he didn't film this thinking, and then when I get caught, this will be great evidence. It's like, no, then I can relive it later. Yeah. My followers also.
Yeah. Who's that? That's a good question. Is he uploading this to some kind of underground dark web site for people? don't know if that was ever really explored, but it is weird for him to use that phrasing. The last images on the card were taken on early September 6th and showed Kathleen's body in the back of a black pickup that authorities believe belonged to Smith. The phone recorded the location where the image was taken, along the Seward Highway south of Anchorage, the same area where Kathleen's body was found several weeks later. Investigators determined Smith drove around with Kathleen's body in the back of his pickup for 2 days before dumping her corpse on that rural road south of Anchorage. There really are no words. I mean, we can keep saying like how horrific this is to carry like a bag of garbage.
Like
literally.
A bag of garbage. That's what I was going to say. It's the one thing to note is the complete lack of respect and dehumanization for these women, that it was, they were treated like they were there for his amusement, pleasure, and then he was ready to discard him, like he was just done with the soda can, he's finished drinking. And I think that gives you just a window into how he thought of them.
Yeah. And he's married at this time. His wife, I think, would travel for work some, so much like Gilgo Beach and her Beaumeister, when it all comes out, it's, you start to line up. Oh, the partner was out of town. They were traveling for work. It's always like they're by themselves, so they can kind of get away with this stuff because no one's keeping tabs on him at the time.
Yeah, it's suspiciously matched up. Absolutely. Sinister Hood will be right back.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Her body was discovered on October 2nd. Police had no leads. It wasn't until Valerie Kassler came forward with the SD cards that they were able to make an arrest. On October 9th, 2019, police arrested 48-year-old Brian Stephen Smith on charges of first-degree murder. The next day, authorities released Kathleen's identity to the media. After Smith had been interrogated for hours about Kathleen Henry's murder, he made a strange comment to the troopers, according to District Attorney Brittany Dunlop.
With no prompting, he tells the troopers in the bathroom, "I'm going to make you famous." He comes back in and says, "Are you guys in a rush to go home? You guys got some more time? You want to keep talking?"
Seems proud.
Yeah, and that's what the defense attorney later tried to say. Oh, well, the second confession was because he had confessed for 8 hours, so they really forced it out of him. The troopers were like, "We were done with him. We were literally about to just be like, okay, we're going to take you in. You obviously did this. You know, there's footage. So you need to go to the bathroom first." And then, like, in the bathroom, it's like, "You want to keep talking?" Like, enjoy it, pride, and wanting. I think it's BTK, what Dennis Rader similarity of like, "I want to tell you about this for legal purposes," but no, it's really because they want to relive it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're excited to give the grisly details. The troopers agreed to keep talking. Smith then admitted to picking up Veronica Balchuk and bringing her back to his home because his wife was out of town. He said he asked Veronica to take a shower. When she refused, he went to his garage, got his gun, and came back inside where he killed her. He then dumped her body near the Old Glen Highway in Anchorage. So he would do this with his victims. He would target women that were experiencing homelessness, offer them some respite, a place to stay for a few nights, a hot shower, food. It's very hard to turn that down when you're living on the streets in Alaska.
Yes, and especially when the person who's offering it, unlike Rex Huerman, the Gilgo Beach serial killer, who would have to hire women because he was very ogreish and kind of off-putting and kind of rude, Brian Smith, from the talks from his coworkers, was kind of charming and sweet, and especially if his excuse is, "Oh, I work at a hotel. I could just get you a hotel room for free. It's not a big deal. Like, we can just hang out together." You know, it starts to be Well, it sort of seems too good to be true, but when he has that charming, you know, if dad jokes kind of silly mm-hmm. demeanor, and he's, you know, 48, it's not like he's some, you think, well, he can't take me. He seems like just a workaday guy who's got a big heart. And you're right. That is such a insidious thing to do, knowing that it's something that they're not likely going to turn down. And for every woman that said yes, who knows if there's 5, 10, or 20 who said no, you know, and yeah. happened to turn him down. But mm-hmm. it's that eerie thought of she said no to a shower. And yeah. that was a executable offense mm-hmm. in his view.
6 months before his confession, back in April of 2019, mushroom pickers along that stretch of roadway had found a partial skull with a gunshot wound. Police were unable to make an identification at the time, and the case remained open. With Smith's confession, testing was conducted, and the skull was confirmed as a match to Veronica using dental records. Police searched Smith's home and found the gun he used to kill Veronica. Technicians found an electric hard drive that had deleted but recoverable videos Smith had taken of Veronica at his home, both before and after her death. On October 17th, 2019, Smith was charged with another count of first-degree murder, this time in connection with Veronica's death.
And you know, I always say everybody deserves to have a good defense because you want to make sure there's no constitutional rights being railroaded. But it's quite a different thing to say, there is no evidence that my client had anything to do with this second murder because he was coerced into this confession that he told the troopers, hey, you want to hear a story? And then also deleted stuff from hard drives that he tried to hide of footage of her both before and after she died at his house. Do you think, and the gun that did it. So somebody else did it? Somebody else also, came in? Like, it's ridiculous. That's like such a ridiculous defense to me.
And all the stuff from Valerie Kastler.
Yes.
You're like, so we're supposed to believe you did this to one woman but didn't do this to another woman?
Exactly. Oh, and the voiceover is somebody just doing a perfect impression of you.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. A South African accent is a very distinct accent, too. Mm-hmm. So, especially when you're in Alaska and most people don't have that accent, you know, it's something that's definitely going to stick out to you. Also, when you're driving around trying to pick up all these women who know each other from yeah. living on the streets, word I assume would get out like, hey, the guy with the heavy South African accent, he's bad news.
Yeah, don't get in the black truck.
Don't go with him. Don't get in his truck.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. But that's what gets me. It's one thing to say, well, the evidence is circumstantial. That doesn't matter. You can still convict on circumstantial evidence. You don't have to stand outside, look up at the sky, and let the raindrops go directly into your eyeballs. If you go outside and it's sunny and the ground is dry, and then you go in and take a nap and you come back outside and everything's wet and there's raindrops on cars, you can kind of go, oh, I bet it rained. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have to say, oh, well, I was out there and the rain was in my... It's like, well, clearly it rained. Like, clearly he did this. And I think... Yes. There was a significant amount of that kind of evidence.
Oh, yeah. Here. Especially with the gruesome nature of the evidence, too.
Mm-hmm.
In total, Smith was charged with 14 different crimes related to Kathleen and Veronica's murders, including sexual assault and first-degree murder. He pleaded not guilty on all counts. The trial began in February of 2024, with the media calling it
the memory card murders. Here's the thing. Not everything needs a moniker. Sometimes you can say the murder of Kathleen Henry and Veronica Abouchuk. You don't have to give it a nickname.
Yeah, the media loves a clickbait, catchy headline that are almost always insensitive and don't do justice mm-hmm. to what the trial is about, and kind of diminishes it into like, oh, the memory card murders, the one where he filmed like all those brutal things. And as the family members of the victims, you're like, well, their names were Veronica and Kathleen. And yeah, that did happen too, but I don't want their whole trial to be summed up by that.
Mm-hmm. And you, and that idea of, oh, the most gruesome part, which is mm-hmm. the footage of their literal torture. That's what gets on the headlines. And as the family members, you have to remember that exists out there. It makes me think of Micah Miller's family taking photos. Like, you know that on some digital cloud somewhere, there are mm-hmm. frozen in time captured images of the worst thing that ever happened to somebody that is your whole heart.
That a lot of people have seen.
Yeah.
That really gets me, too. If mm-hmm. I was the one indignity. Of these family members, just knowing that, like, you want to protect that. That's, like, something that is... So just like, you just don't, you got to protect it. You're like, mm-hmm. I want to protect them even in their death from mm-hmm. like this being sensationalized or gawked at, because there are a ton of places online, maybe where he did have followers, where this kind of shit people love, and it's disgusting and horrid. And if I had anything to do about it, they would all be shut down. But unfortunately, I don't. I don't even know how to access the dark web.
No, so. I don't. We'll talk about almost a preview for a future episode. We sort of, well, maybe we'll get into that in a future episode of where everything gets stored and how and who can access it. But when you have stuff like this, you're right. I think that you want to protect that dignity of your loved one in their final moment. Mm-hmm. And I get it that law enforcement has to see it, and you know, jurors need to see it to make a decision, which is unfortunate. But like anytime I see like creators or anybody who's selling crime scene photos, it makes me sick to my stomach.
Oh, angry, sick. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the worst part of this industry, like a true crime industry. As you mentioned the jurors, but God damn, I've read some statements from these jurors, and they mm-hmm. said they would just go back into that jury room and cry with mm-hmm. each other and just like hold each other, because they're mm-hmm. like, holy shit, we just saw, I mean, and
the devil.
So many of them were like, it is completely fucked me up. I'm in counseling now to process all of this. I mean, you're mm-hmm. seeing a snuff film come in real life. Like, literally. you didn't ask for that. You don't want to see that happen. Mm-hmm. Even the family members left the room during it. Or the screens were turned, so it was just audio. But even that, to hear your loved one's last moments in the most brutal way possible. I'm not pro death penalty, but with people like this,
just take them out like, in the middle.
Just take them. What good are they doing in the middle
of the Alaska Triangle? Yeah. Just yeet them into the middle of the forest mm-hmm. and leave them. Let them deal with it.
Somebody like this, I don't think can be rehabilitated. It's too deep and ingrained. These just the sickness and the violence.
And this is I'll say early days of the case, but this has just recently been resolved. I'm curious that a person I don't think goes from zero to Silence Doing of the this. Lambs. This is the most egregious kind of like horrible stuff. So I think there's probably some other victims in his wake mm-hmm. that maybe not even in Alaska, you know, maybe wherever he used to live before that.
Oh, yeah. In South Africa, one of his coworkers that worked with at a call center with him there said he was trying to start his own online dating service. So that would be probably a good way to attract a lot of people that you could then prey upon.
That's true. Yeah.
Smith's defense attorney, Tim Iyer, tried unsuccessfully at pretrial hearings to have any and all evidence recovered from the SD cards excluded from trial. He argued they could not be properly authenticated and that the chain of custody had been broken. A judge disagreed, allowing Valerie Kasler to testify to how she came into possession of the data and police investigators to verify the authenticity of the data.
My thing is you have to try things for your client. This is a silly thing to argue, given the suggestion that, what do you think, she manipulated these photos and videos and made them? If she's, and I think the judge made the right call here, she's able to tell you what she did and in what order she did it. And then police investigators can tell you the digital breadcrumb trail of what she did and what order. Like, they know that this SD card, it was copied from the metadata of the image and video, tell it when it was taken, where it was taken, and at what time, and in what resolution, and what machine it was taken on, this type of a cell phone. And then when she puts it on that SD card, all of that is captured too. It's not like a picture with a blank slate behind it. Mm-hmm. So the fact that it can be authenticated, again, I think, you know, you're a defense attorney and you try what you got to try, but that's a little bit of a tenuous argument.
Yeah. I imagine that defense attorney was like, well, this is going to seal our fate. So mm-hmm. got to get it out of there.
He wasn't done though.
Again, I don't get how they do it, because I there are a lot of times I would love to be a defense attorney in wrongful conviction cases and arguing for my client's innocence in something like this, where I'm like, oh, you absolutely did this and you're a monster. Mm-hmm. It would be real hard for me to say anything positive about him or try to help him.
Right. It's like my ethical obligation is to make sure that you have a defense that comports with your constitutional rights. But you should plead guilty right away. You should really plead guilty. But I think that he, as many serial killers are smug and thought, well, we'll see. We'll see at trial. Especially if you've been able to charm your way through life for 48 years, you probably think, oh, once the jury, Robert Durst style, right? Like, oh, just put me in front of the jury. They'll love me.
No, sir.
No, they will not. Sinister Hood will be right back.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Iyer then attacked Valerie Kasler, calling her
a habitual, forceful, and very comfortable liar. Nothing she said adds up, and nothing that she said could be corroborated was corroborated.
Iyer also alleged the police did not do a thorough investigation, claiming they should have conducted further DNA evidence to determine if another party was involved. As for the lengthy confession as to what Smith did to both victims, Iyer claimed his client had gotten off a really long flight and was tired from traveling.
Oh, Mr. Iyer.
Dude.
Sir.
This that ain't the way. You're grasping at straws, buddy. Ask anyone on that jury. You ever been on a flight? You ever gotten off?
Yeah,
you were tired?
Me too. Yeah.
Did you ever go brutally murder someone and then film it for your own gratification?
It's like, no.
Yeah, or even because most people don't.
Did you go and confess to two random crimes over which only you would have details of like where their body was dumped, when you got him, where you got him? Specific details only you knew? Would you ever just magically like get off a flight with that information? Oh, no, because you're not a serial killer. This guy is.
Yeah. It's weird that, like, I get having to zealously advocate for your client, but also when you're like, you gotta know as a defense attorney, this is so weak. Like, I'm almost embarrassed to present this as an excuse.
Right. And you should be. And I think really good defense attorneys, you know, this is one case of his whole career. But I would say when you are handed with a huge pile of very incriminating things, you probably want to find less, I don't want to just say rude, but like jumping on this woman who is the one who found the footage and being like, you're just a liar and you don't even know anything. And she does it and attacking that person to me does it, especially when you have female victims, a male defendant, and you're a male defense attorney. It just does not play well when you have a violent client to be aggressive. Like that is not the move, sir.
And no.
Clearly.
Especially with a female person on
witness.
The stand. And she, you know, admitted that she hasn't had the most clean life and that was one of the reasons she didn't want to come forward. But the fact that she did come forward is in Veronica's niece says, like, she is so brave and we credit her to everything because nothing would have been found out without her. And then for this asshole to get up there and publicly humiliate her about her life choices and things that have happened that, you know, she's not proud of. It just makes you look like a huge asshole.
Yeah, that's what I was like. It's one thing to try to poke holes in the prosecution's case, but it's quite another to vilify literally the hero in this case who cracked the whole case open. Not the move, sir.
No. However, jurors heard the confessions for themselves. They also saw the brutal videos that showed the harm inflicted on both victims, paired with a running commentary from Smith in his recognizable South African accent. Members of the gallery did not see the video footage, but they were able to hear the audio. On February 22, 2024, Brian Smith was found guilty of all 14 charges, including two counts of first-degree murder, for the murders of Kathleen Jo Henry and Veronica Abalchuk. The jury deliberated for less than 2 hours. After delivering their verdicts, the jury also found Smith guilty of an aggravating factor that he had subjected Kathleen Jo Henry to substantial physical torture.
And that's because the photos and video from the phone showed footage of her while she was alive and what he had done to her. And under Alaskan law, finding that extra aggravating factor made the minimum sentence 99 years.
Nice. On Friday, July 12th, Brian Smith was sentenced to 226 years behind bars for the brutal slayings of Veronica and Kathleen. In a victim's impact statement read by Veronica's daughter, Christy, she told the courtroom,
"I hope he is swarmed with guilt someday, knowing he stole so many people's joy. I will dance the day he dies."
I appreciate an honest victim impact statement where they're like, what's the worst that can happen to me now? I'm going to say in a court of law, I will dance on your grave.
Yes.
Because you have destroyed our family. You took my mother from me. You took my kids' grandmothers. And you sit there and show zero remorse. Like the look on this man's face, just, honestly, at times it looked like he was enjoying it.
It did.
Especially when the videos are getting played back.
Like I said, it's like he wanted to relive it. And I think that's why, despite extremely incriminating evidence, he refused to plead. Like like you said, Dennis Rader pled guilty. Like the fact that he wanted to sit there and put them all through it again, I think was a pleasure for him. But I do hope, like she said, that he is racked with guilt and destroyed in an Alaskan jail.
Yeah, at the very least, he will die in there.
Right.
Smith's wife, Stephanie Bisland of Anchorage, told reporters that she planned on visiting her husband in jail and that she would not divorce Smith, declaring,
"I said my vows."
Well, this is a hard stop because what?
Yeah, the vow doesn't, I think it didn't contemplate the scenario here. And you can break a vow. It's breakable all the time.
People do it all the time. In fact, like more than 50% of the people that get married to it.
Truly, right? For a lot less than this, ma'am. A lot less.
Yeah. I got divorced for a whole lot less than this. Not even close to this.
Yeah.
I wonder, like with so many of these, they say, "I had no idea."
Yeah.
But really, did you have no idea, or did you have an inkling something was fucked up, but you just didn't want to admit it to yourself? Were you really not treated at all by him in an abusive manner? It's just so hard for me to believe that someone like him is capable of doing these things, but also at home, great husband, never would have suspected it. Like, I'm not calling her a liar, but I think we become delusional ourselves to protect ourselves in many ways.
That's a good way to put it, is that, you know, it is a self-protective delusion that she's maybe gone into. The only thing I can think, when we see a spouse of a horrifying criminal remain married to them, and I have no reason to believe this. This is just hypothetically in other cases. If that spouse had knowledge of something, you remain married to the person, then you cannot be compelled to testify against your spouse. So,
That's a good point.
We don't know if he had any other crimes, if so, what they were, and what anybody's involvement would be in those crimes. But if you remained married to a person, you couldn't be compelled to testify. However, not everybody's a lawyer like me. Not everybody thinks like that. And sometimes people just think, "Well, I said my vows. I guess we have to stay married." And if that's the reasoning, that, ma'am, that ain't the way.
I think she was kind of catfished or hoodwinked or bamboozled from the jump. With the online forum, online gambling, and he, you know, moved to the States, married her, and then became a citizen. So he's also using her as a way to do all of that. I feel like she was kind of a pawn in his plan to just go somewhere else to do the kind of stuff he was trying to do.
No, I agree.
Kathleen Henry's family has not spoken publicly about her death, and efforts by Alaska public media to reach relatives have not been successful. Frida Dan, who is part of the Abalchuk family by marriage, sat through the trial nearly every day and told the AP that the police and prosecutors were thorough in their work and respectful of the families. Dan said,
"We weren't invisible, and we are people." And there is footage of them holding each other. One of the mm-hmm. family members kind of holding the other one, whispering kind of as the verdict is being read, because I guess some of the cameras were pointed at the gallery and they just happen to be so close. And they're just whispering, going, "We're getting justice. We're getting justice for Veronica and Kathleen." And
bless I was like, them. And they have red handprints mm-hmm. smeared across their face, which is one of the signs for missing and murdered Indigenous women. Mm-hmm. They would stand outside the courthouse with signs protesting and just kind of demanding justice and for mm-hmm. more light to be brought on this in general, especially because their sister's murder is still unsolved, too.
Mm-hmm. No, it's true.
Amber Nickerson, a member of Community United Safety and Protection, or CUSP, an advocacy group for sex workers, shared her thoughts on the brutal case with news outlets, saying,
"I hope this causes some people to say enough is enough. We need to look deeper when somebody's body is found on a park bench, when a woman's body is found in the woods. We need to do more."
CUSP held a protest in summer of 2024, demanding investigators look into the disappearance of Cassandra Boskovsky. Her family believes she may be another victim of Brian Stephen Smith because the convicted killer had photos on his phone suggesting he may be involved in her disappearance. Cassandra also shared mutual friends with Kathleen Hendry. Cassandra's family and the protesters are demanding that the Anchorage Police Department fully investigate her case and recover her remains. At the protest, family members, including Boskovsky's aunt and cousin, expressed their anguish over the lack of timely communication from the police and the devastating impact of the situation on their large extended family.
And like I said earlier, there's no way this is the first one.
Oh, that this no.
These are the first cases. So I hope that Cassandra's family are making more strides, and that if the Anchorage Police Department, the Abouchuk and the Hendry family both said, you know, they worked well with us. We feel like they really got justice. It's a delayed justice, but we're able to celebrate it. So hopefully, given that they do, you know, they're familiar with each other, that they can help advocate as well.
Yeah. I would also, unfortunately, think, did this start in Alaska? I mean, no. He was in South Africa for mm-hmm. decades before that. Yeah. So I would be looking into unsolved cases with the same type of MO and seeing if there's something else you can pin him with, too.
Mm-hmm. Wherever he lived or visited, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sinisterhood will be right back.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Alaska has one of the highest rates of missing and murdered Indigenous women, ranking fourth nationally behind New Mexico, Washington, and Arizona, according to the Alaska Native Women's Resource Center. The center released statistics that show the overwhelming need for attention to this issue. 83% of American Indian and Alaska Native adults have experienced some form of violence in their lifetimes. 55% of AI or AN women have experienced physical violence from a partner, and 56% of AI AN women have experienced sexual violence in their lifetime.
So a vast majority of AI AN adults have experienced violence, and then a majority of women have either been physically abused or sexually abused. Like, a majority.
Yeah.
That's the rule, not the exception.
The norm is... Mm-hmm. If you are an AI or AN woman in Alaska, that the chances of you being sexually assaulted are more than 50%.
Yeah. And that's why I think they created that task force for sure.
Absolutely. Alaska Natives make up roughly 19% of the state's population, but they represent a staggering 47% of reported rape victims. There is also disparity in reporting, according to Boreal Community Media. In 2016, there were more than 5,000 reports of missing American Indian and Alaska Native women and girls, but the U.S. Department of Justice's Federal Missing Persons Database only documented 116.
116 is not representative of 5,000.
Not even a little bit. The Alaska Native Women's Resource Center works to spread awareness and empower communities to work with law enforcement to end the high rates of violence. Brochures and toolkits on their website offer resources and information on ways to help. Learn more at aknwrc.org. So what do we think?
I'm glad to see that there is a resource center that's working to train community members, both the public, but also law enforcement and support service members, on better ways to reach these communities. I think when there is that bridge across, that hand across. But I think that the woman from CUSP, Amber Nickerson, hit the nail on the head. Like, when there is a body found, because, you know, this wasn't like, we had no remains to find. It's mm-hmm. like, we at least found a body along a road and say, well, we can't test it. Who knows? It's like, if there needs to be more resources, that's a different conversation of like, we don't have the resources to test this or whatever. But if it is, there's a lot of unhoused people, or there are people experiencing homelessness, and I don't know. Every single victim has to be taken seriously. And there cannot be this person is more dead or less dead. Like, well, this is an important like politician, and this is just some person that, you know, like you said, unfortunately has to live under an overpass or something due to circumstances. We care because they both trace back to a perpetrator, right? Regardless mm-hmm. of who the perpetrator victimized. My concern isn't, oh, well, was this person worth more who died, or was this person worth more? That's an insane measure to take, because you can't measure the value of a human's a human. The concern of the community is, look into every murder. And especially mm-hmm. if there are rates this high for a population that makes up 20% of the state, but they make up 50% of the rapes. What is allowing that to happen? And I'm so glad that there is a center dedicated to that. And that's what you have to have, is community stakeholders who are able to say, because 9 times out of 10, the people in the community can absolutely tell you why they're suffering.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot of this too is, well, not only are these women, you know, homeless, but they're not white. So it's, you know, they go to the bottom of the priority list. But like you said, I don't understand the logic in any law enforcement thinking like that, except I don't think it is logical. I think it's systemic, and it's just like ingrained. But the reality is, you got a serial killer on your hands, Alaska. Like, don't mm-hmm. you want to get that under control? So maybe somebody, you know, maybe your own daughter mm-hmm. isn't a victim, or at the very least, like, you have someone just like stalking the community and everyone's in fear. Mm-hmm. So to just brush it under the rug helps no one. All it does is mean I don't have to deal with that paperwork.
Right. And like I said, if it is something like, well, listen, we'd love to deal with this, but we really only have 3 people in the murder department, and there's been this many crimes or whatever. Like I said, that's a whole other mm-hmm. discussion to have. But if it is from a misunderstanding of a community, or lack of understanding, or a lack of that community outreach. So I'm glad to see organizations like CUSP, who are like, mm-hmm. we're here to speak out for sex workers, and the AKNWRC being like, we're here to talk about what has happened to Alaska Native women in their communities. So anytime we can support organizations like that, or join them, or utilize their resources, I think that's good to have a working knowledge of that as members, if our listeners are living in Alaska mm-hmm. or wherever you live, going, oh, I wonder what those rates are near me, because there's probably, you know, there's always pocket communities because of some, and it's wild, you'll trace it back of like, oh, well, there's a large community of Germans in this area of Texas because of this, or, you know, whenever there are communities like that, not that the Germans are undergoing anything horrible in Texas, it was just the first thing that came to mind, but wherever you live, there are often these niche communities that, even if you're not a member of, understanding that it makes your whole community safer when it's their problem, and when you make their problem your problem too, or at least just your concern, and what can I do? I think that we, like you said, there's this fucking serial killer, man.
Right.
If that means we got to turn more attention to this, I'd love to turn the attention to it so that we get them off the street.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can't think, well, there's a serial killer, but he's targeting people that don't look like me. Fuck because it. One, yeah, no. That's real shitty, and be a better person. Two, that doesn't mean that's all the victims, you know, forever. Mm-hmm. Like, right. So like, to be like, well, it won't happen to me mm-hmm. is, an entitlement and a privilege that a lot of people think that they have because of their skin color. When it's, like you said, let's look out for each other as a community. Our entire community is at risk right now. Mm-hmm. Does anyone want to be walking around and find their loved one or find a body under a picnic bench? Like, I would want my city, state, everyone to feel safe, regardless of who they are.
Truly. And that's why I'm really glad that, like I said, in the last few years, Alaska as a state has really taken this seriously and said, like, no, we want to have at the state police level a whole task force. We want to make sure that the crimes are being reported up to the federal database. So hopefully things are getting better. But it's cases like this show you why all of those measures are so vital.
Yeah, and necessary. But they have done a really great job of looking into this. And I love to see that the victims' families, as well as just other concerned citizens, like, are protesting to continue
looking into
getting it. Things like this on the books. And that's, you know, the power of a community. You maybe the police aren't doing anything. You put some pressure on them with protests and calling your state representatives and whatnot. And that's another way you can help kind of make a difference when cases like this.
Truly. And I think any of these organizations like the AKNWRC or the CUSP or whatever, those organizations all started as somebody's idea. Like, they didn't exist at some point, and someone thought, this is a problem and I'm going to make a thing about this. And it's those people. And what do they say? It's like that Dr. Seuss, unless somebody cares an whole awful lot, nothing's going to get better. It's not.
So you can be that person who starts that organization that changes things and helps better people's lives.
Join up.
Yeah.
Well, if you like our free episodes, you'll love our Patreon bonus content. You can join for free to see what we're up to next or dive into over 1,000 hours of segments like Judge Christie, where I rule on petty grievances that you send in, True Crime Headlines, where, as the name implies, we talk about the true crime headlines that are in the news and updates on cases. Heather Saves, we just see what scrolling at 3 a.m. might bring. Those are always a fun thing. And so many more.
And if you're not sure what it's all about, we also have free trials where you can join for free for a week, check out the perks, and cancel anytime without getting charged, as long as you cancel it before the trial is over. And you get so much when you join Patreon.
You do. You get ad-free episodes, monthly live stream Q&As, which are now held on the third Thursday of every month.
So tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow. There you go.
Well, Feb 20.
If you're hearing this on Feb 19th, just know, even if you hear it after Feb 20, you can always go back and rewatch them. That's the thing, too. We have all the replays available on Patreon as well. We do quarterly live bonus content, weekly audio bonus content. Just for signing up as a free member, you get one of those sent to you once a month. Monthly mini-sodes, like you heard today, merch discounts, and a community of the best listeners on the whole internet. And for recent patrons, thank you so much for supporting the show. And make sure you stick around after our sign-offs to hear your shout-out.
Head over to Sinisterhood.com, click shop on the top banner to check out Sinisterhood merch like t-shirts, mugs, tote stickers, and even clothes for your kiddos. And use that Patreon discount in the pinned post.
While you're on our website, you can also review the show, follow us on socials, and check out the episode description for sources used during our research. There's also all the information you need about Crime Wave at Sea 2025, the Crime Festival at Sea that we are going to be a part of this November 3rd through 7th. It's going to be so much fun. You get the exclusive opportunity to not only just hang out with us on a cruise ship, which... Yeah. Who knows what we're going to see up above so or much. Down below.
Below
we're going through the Bermuda Triangle, but also a ton of other people that are even cooler than we are.
Oh, absolutely. It is. Talk about exclusivity. It will be the only time you can go on vacation with Christy and me. Like, we don't go on vacation with folks all the time. And especially, probably the only time you're going to go on a cruise with either of us. So it is a chance.
There's probably 100% chance that is a true statement.
But... So take the opportunity while you can. You're not just going to cruise with us. You're going to cruise with Ed and Henry from last podcast. You're going to cruise with the folks from Scared to Death, from True Crime Campfire. So it's not just the Sinisterhood show. You get to see other true crime performers as well. Meet those fans, make your new true crime bestie. We put up a link, a post on Patreon. We'll send out another reminder, but in the comments, if you want to bunk up with somebody and, you know, share costs or whatever, that might be a way to, you know, make a new bestie. You'll leave with your Christy or Heather after the cruise.
I love that. I hope so.
But yeah,
it's going to be a lot of fun.
Definitely go to crimewaveatsea.com/sinister to get your fan code. Even if you're on the fence, you're not sure if you want to go or not, the signing up for the fan code is totally free, and it just allows you to get information about it. And then you use that code so that when you go to the cruise, they know to give you like a seat at our show and stuff like that. But in the there's not a limit on the number of fan codes, but there are a limit on the number of cabins and tickets that are available. And thank you to everybody who's booked so far. We're so excited to see
I know.
So many of y'all.
We got the
already.
Email today and we were like, oh my gosh, we're going to have a lot of fans there. So
yes,
we hope to have even more. So if you're like, I'm on the fence, I don't know if like-minded people are going to be there, I promise you that they are, because we know that people have signed up just with our code. And of course, with all the other shows too. And, you know, we're all aligned with similar interests and whatnot. So it's going to be a really good time.
So much fun. Go to crimewaveatsea.com/sinister and get your fan code and then book your trip. We'll see you on the high seas.
Mm-hmm.
You can follow us on Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod. Like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Watch full video versions of most of the Wednesday episodes on YouTube, as well as clips from the show on TikTok. Plus, order your own custom video shout out at cameo.com/sinisterhood. Christy, where are you at on the internet?
Oh, I'm going to be posting all my cruise pics at Christy M. Wallace on Instagram and Threads. And I'm on TikTok at Christy or GTFO.
I will also be posting those cruise pics everywhere on the internet at Heather versus the World.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves
and the high seas. Keep it creepy. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for supporting the show. Here are your special Patreon shoutouts: Gabrielle Spanberg,
Marge,
Amanda Lynn McDonald,
James Nessel,
Callie Morrell,
Courtney Kazmierski,
Elizabeth Anastasia,
Jill Andrews,
Nikki Victoriano,
Turner Viana,
Sarah Armstrong,
Emily Parker,
Teresa McLemore,
Eli McCabe,
and Cassie.
Thank you all so much for supporting the show. We could not do this without you. We appreciate each and every one of you. Thank you for supporting our show. We hope we pronounced your names correctly. Stay safe, stay healthy, and keep it creepy.
Sinister.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.